coming trash. And I am a pagan. And that's why this show is called Trash Opinions.
My shoes. Damn, Jay. That sounded good, bro.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Trash Opinions, where we talk all things trash. I am your host, Trash, and today we are talking about Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, which I enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would, to be honest. I thought I was going to have another Cambodia experience where it's just all gameplay, all game body, and no, it's not. It has a lot of great character moments on it, and it's a really enjoyable season from start to finish. It's just so much of the negative comes from Jeff, weirdly enough, where he really hammers in the theme of this season a lot of times, and he just has all these super corny jokes about, like, the participation trophies and shit like that. Like, they literally have a puzzle where, the answer to it is not a participation trophy, which is just absolutely corny. And just Jeff just, like, him just being like, oh, is that a millennial thing? Like, about literally everything is kind of ridiculous too. So, enjoyable season. Kind of shit theme. But anyway, let's get right on into Millennials versus Gen X. Now, finding a worst placement for this season was kind of hard because there's nobody who's, like, bad. But in a rare instance, our first name is the first boot, actually, and that is Rachel Acko. I still don't understand why she was the first boot, other than she was kind of annoying. She really didn't do anything. She has this Carolina Eastwood edit where she's shown to be a tad irritating and just leaving the audience to draw their own conclusions. But I still don't think she was as a bad player as Carolina, but as mediocre a character, oh, for sure. I can't remember anything about her, so she's going in meh. And next up, we have someone who I'm kind of disappointed in is this low, because I really didn't find her to be terrible at all, and that is Cece Taylor. She annoys me at first by being almost as much of a boomer as Paul, but she wasn't terrible. Cece's just kind of a nothing character. She survives the Paul blindside after taking 4 hours to cross a balance beam. Still a better balance beam walker than Chris Doherty, though. She's another on the Gen X tribe that doesn't do anything wrong other than just being an older woman. She's not even the worst at the challenges, and she's not finding idols. I don't know why David wasn't the boot over her, but whatever. It's fine because I like David more. I feel bad for the gal, but they barely give her any screen time, and I don't know anything about her, so I guess she's going in meh. And up next, we have another character who could have been pretty decent, but they gave her nothing. We have Lucy Huang. Kind of weird that three of the first four boots were the Asian women, but whatever. She gets idled out for targeting Jessica and her red puffy eyes too early. Also, I guess she may have been bossy. She really didn't do much, but it's interesting to speculate how long she may have lasted if she wasn't idled out by a baffling move from David. She's going in meh. And just to show how, like, good this cast is, this low we have Chris Hammonds. Chris is a big dude. Jim Ross would love this guy. He gets fanboyed on by Zeke for being a member of the 2000s national winning Oklahoma Sooners football team. Yeah, The Rock was a college champion too. You don't see him bragging about it. Anyway, he's on the dominant alliance of the Gen X tribe, and once he swaps, he buddies up to Zeke, and he's pretty much the only strong guy in challenges there, and I felt bad he had to carry that team through challenges. Once he's at the merge, he's seen as a huge threat and eliminated despite having three other people voting with him. He's a decent player, but I don't know, he was kind of a nothing character at the end of the day. Not bad by any means, just sort of meh. And I'm actually pretty shocked that this character is this high, but up next we have Paul Wachter. You're supposed to be a Gen Xer, dude, not a boomer. I think he missed that memo. He was born in 1963. This man is a boomer. Anyway, he has the comedic chops of a Jimmy Kimmel sketch, and he's a total cornball. I mean, I'm a millennial, and I don't remember getting participation trophies other than, like, in elementary school, which, are you really gonna be mad about them giving them to little kids? I mean, come on, Oldie McOldington from Oldville, get a grip. He has the initial dominant alliance, but it doesn't matter because he rubs people the wrong way and they turn on him. I was so ready to shit on this guy and just put him in annoying and move on, but he goes and has a heart attack on the show and makes me feel bad about completely shitting on the guy. But then he says some shit about, I play music you've never heard of. True, because there's no such thing as the internet or Spotify or anything like that where you can listen to old music on. You just had to be there in order to experience old music. Totally. It's not like they play old music in places like all the time. Side tangent, I once had a couple of Gen Xer women tell me and my friend that they were just at a 90s concert with artists you've probably never heard of, like Vanilla Ice and CNC Music Factory, as if everyone in the world hasn't heard Ice Ice Baby. I mean, come on. We made fun of them after they left. I was alive when they were relevant, dude. I'm not 20. You're lucky, Paul. You survived your heart attack, and you survived going into annoying. He's not boring by any means, so he's not meh. I'm just gonna stick him in fun downfall. And next up, we have Michelle Schubert, Bible salesman. Woof. The way she conducts the Mari blindside is an incredibly impressive watch, and you can easily be tricked into thinking that she's this really smart, strategical player. And then she talks about how dragons were totally real, but there's been a worldwide cover-up of their existence, which, okay, I've heard some crazy conspiracy theories in my time on this planet, but I'm pretty sure even flat earthers would think that was ridiculous. They'd be like, there weren't dragons in the Bible. I mean, there should have been. Anyway, she's in with the cool kids table, and she gets flipped on at the whitest merge ever by Adam's nerd crew and the Gen Xers. She's a tad forgettable outside of the whole dragons thing, but I'll put her in mildly entertaining. And probably right next to her in the overall ranking, we have Jessica Figgy Figueroa. Fig Newton over here gets into a romance spat with Taylor, and Adam's gotta get rid of the Amba. She's a paranoid mess immediately, like, where is everybody? I don't like people breaking off and talking. Like, dude, this is Survivor. She's also calling Michaela a phony, and I actually had to rewind to see if I missed anything, but no, I didn't. It's for no real reason. I mean, yeah. Survivor's full of fake people, but if anyone is too real for Survivor, it's Michaela. So, I found it hilarious. Figgy could have been a good character or a good player if she didn't tie herself to a showmance pretty much immediately, but she's just not her own character and it's sad. But she's for sure memorable, and I actually don't think I would mind seeing a return from her without a showmance just to see how she plays when her personal feelings don't become involved. Her thinking she was keeping her and Taylor's relationship discreet was hilarious. Everyone was talking about how obvious it was from the start, and honestly, it was very bad gameplay on both their parts. Figgy being called into question by ordained minister Jeff Probst about millennials getting hitched right away, which, where is Jeff getting all this information about millennials from? But it was hilarious, and just Jeff being Jeff. Figgy is moderately enjoyable. I'll throw her in mildly entertaining. We are now getting to the second boot of the season, first boot of the millennial tribe. We have Mari Takahashi. Stand back. Millennials have their secret weapon. A gamer girl. Watch your six. She's got cat ear headphones and LED lights. I mean, hey, Kenny did a decent job, I guess, so maybe Mari will do fine? Oh, she gets blindsided as the first casualty of her tribe. Well, maybe if she'd gotten every achievement in Rust, maybe she could have survived the vote, but whatever. She described the game of Survivor as the game of games, and no, sorry, everyone knows that that's Charlie McDennis. As far as second boots go, I would probably put her high up on my player rankings of that list. She had a solid alliance, and that's why she was booted. There were two Warren factions, and she just happened to be the casualty to no fault of her own. For someone who wasn't a big fan of the show before her season, she seemed to have more than enough strategic chops for the game, but I don't know if that would ever warrant a return. She could be fun on an early boot season, though. Mari had a fun downfall. We are now starting to get to people that I actually really like, and first off, we have Will Wall. First off, I do not accept this Gen Z ass baby as a millennial. I always found it hilarious that such a young kid has such a deep, mature voice. He kind of sounds like Penguin Zero. Dude could be the voice actor for an evil alien horde in a video game. It's also hilarious how big a deal Jeff makes about Will not being able to drink beer. Will even holds up his soda like, "No, it's just a soft drink." Like it's his dad or something. In general, Jeff seems to chide him like he's his son. Besides, Will can have a beer. In Fiji, the drinking age is 18. He's fine. Jeff has always been a fan of the idea of having teenagers on Survivor, and Will seems to be his example of what it could be like. He seems to really like Will. Will is decent enough, him getting betrayed by Ken and him making him so mad that he decides to throw his big boy pants on and make a move. Will is no longer a boy, but he is a man. Manly man Will isn't afraid anymore. He's gonna tell his parents, "Mom, Dad, tonight I'm watching a rated R movie, and you won't tell me I can't, because I am a man, and this year, I'm sitting at the adults' table at Thanksgiving. No, Mom, yes I am!" Anyway, I'm getting off track. Will can go into Golden Boy. Next up, we have another rootable character, which is Jessica Lewis. Jessica finds the advantage in the first episode, and it's already like, hell yeah, go girl. Jessica's adorable. She's like one of the only rootable Gen Xers, and I love her reaction to Figgy revealing her relationship with Taylor to her. Jessica just seems like a really sweet mom. She just sucks you in with those big, wide-open eyes, and it's hard not to root for her. She isn't a big character by any means, but she's an affable enough presence on the season where I find myself really liking her despite not getting as much content as I would maybe wanted her to have. And her going out by a rock is just heartbreaking. She was the only one who didn't want to go to rocks and it manifests into her hand. It sucks, but at the end of the day, she did have the choice to flip. She just didn't take it. I feel so bad for her in that moment. I mean, it's hard not to. Her face just says it all. And then she shocks me by giving her legacy advantage to Ken. Losing her in the game this way just sucks. She's going into cute. Next up, same deal. Love this character. Wish she got more content. We have Brett LaBelle. Brett hides being a cop because, according to him, cops don't last long on Survivor. I mean, that's funny, being Tony wins twice and Sarah wins the very next season. Hearing him talk about being an older generation gay and being insecure about it while wishing he could be more open like Zeke was really endearing content for him, for me at least. Even Zeke says that he appreciates the older generation of gays who paved the way. Brett is also just a really good player on the season. He could have easily been the Ken that they bring to the end, but they didn't, because they viewed him as a threat. Was he? I don't think so, but he had more win equity than Ken at least. Brett seems like a good guy and I generally enjoyed him. I love him going out telling David he just won $1 million. Bro, there's a whole nother round. Anyway, he can go into mildly entertaining. Next up, we have someone in the same tier that's actually a big character. We have Taylor Stocker. Holy shit, stand back, Debbie Wanner. This guy's brewed beer, and he's been to North Dakota. Have you been to North Dakota, Debbie? Taylor spends most of the pre-merge sucking face with Figgy, and then once it's the merge, he's stealing food. He has this Jericho jar of snacks he just buries. It's hilarious. Once Figgy is voted out, Taylor just has his target set on Adam. He's saying, "I will destroy you," and everything, going way over the top. It's a treat. For some reason, Adam tells him about his reward steal, even though Taylor is never trusting Adam ever again in a million years, and he was against him the minute he voted out Figgy. Taylor also throws Jay under the bus in the tribal council that he goes home in, and you can just see Jay sitting there with his hands in his face going, "Bro, you're ruining my game." Taylor's exit is also just this blaze of glory where he blows up Adam's spot to the point where Adam is just screaming at Jay, and Taylor's just loving it. He then gets the boot and ends up as one of the worst merge players of all time. Fun downfall for sure. Rounding out the rootable tier, we have someone I really wish got a bigger edit. She was kind of purpled, but I love her anyway. We have the great, the late, Sunday Burquist. Sunday is just adorable. She seems like such a sweet lady. Everyone on the season loved her, and it's hard not to. She's such a good-hearted, relatable mom, and losing her both in the show and in real life sucks so hard. Her husband seems so cool, too. I feel so hard for that entire family for losing such a wonderful woman. She plays in an under-the-radar game where she's never looked at as a target, and she's always let in on at least one of the plans up until her boot. She's never really on the bottom until her blindside. Alliance has shifted, so it's hard to say who exactly she aligned with since there's nobody she votes with consistently, so I have no idea who would take her to the end. Maybe Brett? Does she beat Brett? Probably not. I mean, they booted her because of her goat potential anyway. Regardless, Sunday is an absolute sweetheart, and I hope her family is healing from their massive loss. R.I.P. She's going in cute. Now, after a string of rootable small characters and a non-rootable big character, we have the great tier. And starting off that tier, we have the great Ken McNichol. I immediately dug how he low-key shut Paul up by being like, "Hey man, don't underestimate these kids, they're smart." And Paul just stands there with his mouth open. I also wonder what Ken listens to on vinyl. Probably Archer of Loaf's Icky Metal. I'm projecting again. Ken's all about loyalty and being a good dude, and he plays a very old school game of Survivor. A player I will compare him to is probably Machete Matt from Amazon. He's not a very good player, and he deserves his no vote finalist status, unlike Hannah. He betrays Will for no reason. Oh wait, did I say betray? I meant he tests Will. He plays like it's the first 10 seasons of Survivor, and it's not a game anyone really respects, even at home watching. But I do like Ken. I like Ken a lot. He's a very likable dude, and the Machete Matt comparison isn't that far off because I feel pretty much the same about both dudes. I love him talking about hating being called Ken doll because he doesn't like being compared to a plastic man with no penis, which is fair enough. I mean, Ryan Gosling doesn't seem to mind the no penis part. Another thing I like about Ken is how loyal he is to David, which is ultimately how David was able to survive for as long as he did and have this amazing arc, so Ken gets credit for that. Ken's cool. He may not be a good player, but he seems like a good dude. He's incredibly enjoyable for a pretty boy challenge beast provider and goat. He's like the cool guy who also knows what it's like to be an outcast. He's very real and relatable, and I genuinely like Ken. He's going into entertaining. Next up, we have a future returnee, and I wish I could say that with a smile on my face, but we have Zeke Smith. He opens the season by calling Twitter the worst thing ever invented, and already I'm on this dude's side. It's funny because it's only gotten so much worse since. I feel bad for him when Zeke's like, "Dude, can you give me some space?" to a Hannah that won't stop talking to him and just isn't getting the hint. However, it's just so funny. I also love that Jay has an idol montage. It's great. Zeke's such a fantastic character on this season. He's really strategical and funny. Some people have criticized him for being game body, but I find him to be enjoyable and enough of a human for me to at least like him more than Cambodia Spencer, that's for sure. Zeke's an incredible player too. He just has an issue with threat management, but he has his hands in every cookie jar there is, and if he makes it to the end, I feel like he beats most of the cast. Probably not, Adam. While him being trans isn't brought up at all in the show, in hindsight, hearing him talk about how him and his dad were never close until the last couple years puts a whole new meaning on the relationship, and it's really sweet that he was able to accept his son and cultivate a meaningful relationship with Zeke. Shit's beautiful. It's so cute. It makes my heart swell like I'm the Grinch seeing Cindy Lou Who. I feel like Zeke plays the exact same game every time he plays, so I don't feel like I need to see him for a third time, but on his original season, he makes a huge mark as an awesome player. Shame he gets idled out by Adam. I really enjoyed him. Trans rights. He's going in entertaining. Next up, we have a surprising, for me at least, high ranking in Jay Starrett. Jay is way funnier than I remember him being. His 9-to-5, get a life confessional had me in stitches, and he was just way more enjoyable a character than I remembered him being. He's initially a cool kid bro in the Cool Kids Alliance until Figgy gets booted, and then his allies Michelle and Taylor are the first two boots that emerge, and he's just kind of a dead man walking. But he makes it work for him, because unlike them, he was actually a good player. He has one of the greatest individual Survivor Challenge blowouts I've ever seen. Nobody was even to the second part of the challenge, and he's already done. He has a fun Challenge Beast run, where he lasts long way past his expiration date, and I'm glad he did, because he's so damn entertaining. He has an interesting love-hate relationship with Adam where they end up forming a mutual respect for each other based on both having mothers with health issues. Adam teams up with Ken at the immunity challenge to finally take down Jay's immunity streak and forces his hand into playing the idol. If he had just kept it, he might have been able to win out, and I don't know if he beats Adam, but he can definitely swing Taylor and Michelle. I love how cocky he gets after finding David's fake idol too. It's hilarious. He gets zealous, like, yeah, everyone sucks except me. All he had to do was cover his combination, and he was fine. Jeff did blow it up, though. He was all, oh, Jay forgot to cover his combination, leaving it open for everyone. And of course everyone is like, bet, and cheat off of his paper. He goes out in amazing fashion, and he's just a fun one until the end. He's going high up and entertaining. These next three, I had really trouble ordering them. I mean, it was obvious who was number one, but 2 through 4 were kind of tough. But at 4, we actually have David Wright. People talk about characters being autistic coded, and this is the closest we've gotten so far, and yeah, David's the representation I'm definitely down with. There's nobody I've related to more on the show so far than I have David. He's like the anime character that starts off peeing and pooping his pants, and then he reaches that arc where he's able to fight alongside his friends, and he doesn't belong there. But he wants to be there, and luckily he's on a season where the nerds run the show, and he makes it far. He's also really lucky he wasn't the first boot. I'm actually shocked it was Rachel and not him. What's with this weird trend of people almost being the first boot and then going on to be goated? It happens enough for me to notice it's a thing anyway. His fake idol was brilliant. The way he hit it, like drawing the little marker on the coconut, that legit seems like something Survivor would do, and it would have tricked me. David is an incredible player and votes correctly at every single vote, and for a season with as many, as Hannah would say, trust clusters and shifting alliances, that's fucking impressive. He's also just seems like a genuinely awesome dude inside and outside of the game. I've heard nothing but good things about the guy. He stole my heart and he's going in the love. And right above him, but I don't know, I reserve the right to change my mind about this later, but I do have Hannah Shapiro at number 3. Why is Hannah the only one looking at the camera in her cast photo? It drives me insane and I don't know why. Hannah is another Aubrey archetype, but she's different enough where she becomes her own character outside of the anxious nerdy girl mold. She starts off annoying her alliance like Aubrey by taking forever to vote and being one of the flippers who vote out Murray. Her issues with anxiety is something I can relate to. I feel for her, and it's nice that she's so open about it. You can't really take a break from Survivor. Decompression isn't really a feasible option. I do love how she sniffs out that Brett's a cop, though, and she's all, hey, hey, Deloy Poilite, and eventually boots him out as a threat. I really, really love Hannah all this season. I think she's fantastic and incredibly relatable all throughout. Her neuroticism is such a huge part of her charm. She wears her heart and anxieties on her sleeve. She speaks her thoughts so often. It's almost like a play-by-play commentary on where her brain's at currently. It's also one of her major flaws. She can't really hide what she's thinking or feeling all that well. It's why Zeke becomes sketched out and starts targeting her. She's incredibly lucky to have survived those rounds where Jessica and Zeke went out. She escaped that mid-merge by the skin of her teeth. Her endgame is what makes it, though. She had what she thought was a clear path to a win, and the game goes very much in her way, and in her head it seems like she's the clear winner out of this final three until Adam drops that emotional bombshell that earns him the complete blowout he achieved. It's so depressing that Hannah didn't get a single vote. Really? Not one? She couldn't just get one? How does she have less jury votes than Philip Goddamn Shepherd? She has less jury votes than Clay Jordan and Kim Johnson. She has less jury votes than Will Sims. What the hell is wrong with this world? Hannah Shapiro is wonderful, and I want her to return so bad. She's adorable, and I love her. She's going into love. And at number two, we have Adam Klein. I screwed you 100%, and I lied to you. I can admit that. You're in a worse position than you are now. What a big man for being able to admit that. Now, why did Taylor not forgive such a humble man? Anyway, Adam Klein is wonderful, and I will accept no hate towards my boy Adam. I don't really cry when I watch Survivor, and if I do, it's small tears, but I couldn't help but cry when Adam started to open up more about dealing with his mom dying from cancer, and it just gets sadder and sadder as the season progresses. Adam's brother comes to the loved one's visit instead of his dad, and you just already know there's a reason his dad's not there. Dealing with the loss of a parent is quite possibly the worst kind of loss you can experience. And it's something everyone eventually has to deal with, and seeing the true pain of it all on display is greatly appreciated. It's hard to watch, but it's powerful. Seeing him at the reunion also broke me. Him talking about how his mom died an hour after he arrived back home is just so absolutely gut-wrenching. You can just see the pain on that entire family's face. Ultimately, this is what Survivor's all about. Real stories, real people, real trials and tribulations. It doesn't get any more real than this, and the way Adam didn't just milk it for television was very commendable, since it gave a very genuine quality to everything. It could have easily been sappy and maudlin, but I feel like they did it better than they could have done it. It was very respectful. Anyway, that aside, Adam is such a sloppy, chaotic winner, and I love it. He makes so many mistakes, like he tells Taylor about the reward steal, he pisses off Zeke to the point where he doesn't want to work with him anymore, and he tells Jay he's on the bottom for no reason. I'm shocked he even got to the end, but I'm glad he did. Adam is so entertaining the entire way. I love some of his lines, like, "It's not a test, that's a betrayal." He also plays a better game than people give him credit for. Yeah, it wasn't dominant the entire way, but how dominant he was in that endgame was amazing, and for as sloppy as it was, I'm not sure there's anyone who beats him. He might even beat David. He's not good at challenges, but he has an ally in Ken who can win challenges instead of his targets. Adam makes Jeremy's bombshell at Final Tribal Council look like nothing as he tugs those jury votes right out of those heartstrings, breaking down about his dying mother. It may not be as amazing as Todd Herzog's or Chris Daugherty's Final Tribal Council performances. Hey, that's two mentions of Chris Daugherty in this video, but I don't think there's any that are more powerful than Adam's. I legit cried. It's incredible. It just makes you want to reach into the screen and give the kid a hug. There's just been no other emotional story this good in Survivor up to this point, and I have to put Adam in love, and he's definitely number two on this season. Anyway, enough of that sad boy bullshit. I'm kidding. But we have the real number one in Michaela Bradshaw. It couldn't be anyone else but Michaela Bradshaw. Secrets. Michaela was robbed. That's all there is to say about it. She was robbed before our very eyes, and we could do nothing to stop it. Jay acted like she was the first strategical person ever in Survivor, got scared by her, and voted her out instead of Brett. Michaela is a goddamn treasure this entire season, and should have been invited back at least 4 times by now. All of her scenes are amazing. Even the best of compilation on YouTube is just all of her scenes. Michaela's reactions to Paul's boomer bullshit matches mine, and I absolutely relate to how she wears her heart on her sleeves and her thoughts on her face. I fucking love Michaela. Michaela might be the best pre-merge boot of all time. Her roasting Figgy and Taylor for making out is so freaking funny. We stink, our mouths are dirty, there's sand in our drawers, and you kissing? Amazing. God, she's so quotable. Like, bye Felicia. Hey, what you got there? And damn, Jay, she just has the best lines of the entire season, and they're all in the pre-merge. She's wonderful. Where did they find this woman? Where could I find more of her? She's incredibly smart, too. It was all her downfall. Not only is she comedic and confessional gold, but she's also someone respectable who's been through a lot and works hard at challenges, at camp, and in real life. She even makes fire, and she has a great story. Also, a really underrated challenger moment is when she pushes David out of the way and says, "Move." I've heard it being described as harder to stomach Michaela's boot on the rewatch because you just anticipate it and it becomes this horror movie, and it's an accurate way to describe Michaela's eventual exit. It just made no sense to do. Brett's a huge threat and they just leave him in the game because Michaela played with some rocks and shells. I'm so tempted to throw her in queen tier, but she's definitely going into favorite. Alright, and that was Millennials versus Gen X, and what a wild ride of emotions. We laughed, we cried, we rooted for people who were underdogs. It was fucking great. I really like this season. I like it a lot more than the first time I watched it. I used to compare it to Cambodia, but like, that's not a fair comparison at all. I would compare it more to like, Ko Rong. Honestly, it's just a really good modern season, and it's just a delight. No wonder why Jeff loves this season so much. I get it. But next time, I don't know if it's going to be a week. It might be like 4 days. Who knows? Next time, we are going to be looking at, we're going to be looking at Survivor Game Changers. Okay, it might be next week. Fuck. Game Changers fucking sucks. And, like, I heard this argument the other day that they should stop doing returnee seasons, and I disagreed so hard because, as you know, Micronesia and Heroes vs. Villains are my two favorite seasons, so I was absolutely appalled. But upon thinking about it, when you look at seasons like Game Changers and Karamoan and even to a lesser extent Cambodia, yeah, maybe they had a point. Maybe all newbie seasons are better, and I don't know, maybe it's just the fact that Heroes vs. Villains and Micro Deezer is so 10 out of 10 that it clouds our judgment, and that, like, most returnee seasons actually kind of suck, and it's weird. But we will look at Game Changers. We will talk about that asshole. We will talk about that thing. I don't want to talk about it, but we have to. But, yeah, if you made it to the end, thank you so much. You're fucking awesome. And can't believe we're 33 seasons in already, and can't believe, like, we're about to be in the 40s, like, soon enough. It's going to be in the 40s soon, and, like, oh my god, it's crazy. But, like, thank you. It's been wonderful doing this for you guys, and I'm glad you guys appreciate it. I mean, my last video got, like, 300 views within, like, 3 days, and that was fucking insane for me. I was, like, so happy to see that. I was like, oh my god, the rules. But, yeah, thank you for watching. See you in Game Changers. Bye.